Welcome to another episode of Sips and Screams, where twin sister horror movie fanatics sip themed cocktails and discuss our favorites in the genre. Today, we are going back to 2016 to discuss Hell House, LLC, Limited Liability Corporation. This one was created, written, and directed by Stephen Cognetti, a real triple threat. Starring Gore Abrams, Alice Balk, Ryan Jennifer Jones, and Danny Bellini. This is another, I would say, cult classic in the found footage horror genre that started a franchise. Yes, if you are surprised by that, there are four Hell House movies. This is the OG. So this one, it's got the creep factor up to 11. It's got a creepy backstory of a haunted hotel. It's got outsiders from the big city camping out somewhere. Maybe they don't really belong, or do they? And of course, it's got clowns. Dear God. Oh, so many clowns.
Oh, it does.
I'm Ashley, and joining me today, as always, is my co-host extraordinaire, my twin sister, Allie. Allie, how are you? Are you ready to go to Abaddon?
Yeah, I'm.
Or is it Abaddon?
Ready for a minute. Abaddon? Abaddon Hotel, I think
Abaddon?
It is. Oh, yeah. I'm ready to go to Abaddon Hotel. I mean,
let's go.
I wish I was there right now.
As always, you can follow us on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok. Our handle is at Sips and Screams Pod. Please like, rate, and subscribe. We would love that. You can also email us at sipsandscreams.podcast@gmail.com. And we are everywhere, absolutely everywhere where you get your podcasts. We are where Taylor Swift's new album is streaming. We're there. We're on Spotify. We are on Apple.
We are.
We're everywhere. So check us out. All right, it's Friday night. It's been a long week. Allie, what time is it?
It is. And I'm gonna change up the tune tonight because in honor of Taylor Swift releasing Life of a Showgirl. I mean, yep. I know a lot of our listeners maybe have been listening to that.
Yep.
Like on repeat today. I know I was.
I was. If you haven't, get to it.
Yeah, get to it. It's a fantastic album.
All right, Allie, take it away. Do your thing.
Okay, in honor of Taylor Swift.
Let's go.
It's killer cocktail time.
There we go.
How did
Killer
you?
Cocktail
How did you, Ash?
You did. You did well.
Yeah.
You did well.
Yeah.
What song is that? What song?
That's like my favorite song on the album.
Me Bob favorite. Finger. That's me favorite song.
Yeah. I don't know where it was come with that. But yeah, no. I was trying to sing it in the tune of Father Figure. So I hope it did it justice.
Yeah. You know what? We couldn't do the pod without talking about T-Swift. So
no,
if you're not a fan, just skip this part. We love her.
Yeah, that's fine. But you know, it is Friday night. It is killer cocktail time and we are, all right, I'm going to get you there, everybody. So for those of you who watched this movie, I know.
Dear God. Allie's really drawing all of this out. Start time.
Yeah, I am.
We're at the first segment.
I want it to make sense while we're drinking what we're drinking. When they first get to the hotel, they're like checking everything out and they go to a basement of sorts and they see a wine cellar.
Oh.
And like, that's some old wine.
Yeah.
And there's some white wine, and there's a whole discussion about how like there's no way that wine is still good because it's been sitting in the heat for all that time. So, and they mentioned, you know, that their favorite wine is Pinot Grigio in it. So, you know what? We thought, all right, let's do some Pinot Grigio. Let's do Pinot Grigio.
And then
we rethought that.
We said no.
Because
we don't like Pinot Grigio.
Not a fan.
No,
I'm not a fan of Pinot Grigio. I never have been. Just can't do it. I know it's white wine. So we're drinking a neighbor tonight. And we're going to drink Sauvignon Blanc.
Sauvignon Blanc.
Sauvignon Blanc.
Newsy Savvy B, in particular.
Newsy Savvy B, yes.
I used to drink Pinot Grigio. My palate has, you know, since become more refined.
I can't do it.
Like, I'm also drinking Whitehaven. Cheers.
We're both drinking Whitehaven tonight. I guess it's the first time we've drinking like the same wine. Yes. We're both drinking Whitehaven. Cheers to wine that doesn't go bad in a hot basement, you know?
Yeah. Nom nom. All right. It is time for Sips and Synopsis. Allie, take it away. As always, tell us about the plot of Hell House LLC.
I love that you have to like spell out LLC for
because
us.
Because there's a bunch of...
I appreciate that very much, actually.
Did I look up what LLC was?
Yeah,
I did.
Yeah.
Sure did.
I think like I learned something. Yeah, so we're going back. I thought it was 2015, Ash. You said 2016. So yeah, 2016. You know, this was an indie film, right?
If it was 2015, I apologize, but pretty sure it was 2016.
Right? It never actually made it to theaters.
No.
So what I think is really interesting, and I can speak to this later when we talk about Screamer Meter, but this was actually my first time watching it. I didn't watch it first time around. Like, I didn't even know this movie existed in 2016.
Yeah.
So I'm very glad that I do now.
The reason I watched it when we first started the podcast, people were giving recommendations and people said, have you seen Hell House? I'm like, no. And it sounded right up our alley with the found footage.
Yeah.
So, I forget who it was that recommended it. That is escaping me.
Pickle Myers.
But Pickle Myers. Let's say Pickle Myers.
I think it was Pickle Myers.
Yeah. He's got the good Rex coming in. So thanks for that. And it's time. We're doing it.
I know. And so this movie, so it's a found footage movie, right? I mean, I think there's been a few of those. Ash and I, if you've been listening to the podcast, we like them.
We do
like the found footage movies. Mm-hmm. Paranormal Activity's up there. So this is a bunch of found footage based on a haunted house that's set in a hotel in 2009.
Yeah. So there's a lot to unpack there. It's like
they're
a Russian doll.
So it's, they find these locations, they set up these haunted houses. I think that's been happening a lot, especially during that time. And so, basically every city, I mean, even like Baltimore now, we have a Nevermore Haunt. There's a house that's set up and you can go and visit it, which I'm really excited to. So taking back 2009, and really from the beginning, it's all of this news footage. Mm-hmm. So, and then they're interviewing people. So it sort of starts out very, like, very Blair Witch, right? Very like documentary style.
Yeah.
And they're,
the people they're interviewing, I find pretty realistic.
The
acting is pretty good.
They did. I thought they did a really job with that. So they're interviewing people, like the townsfolk, I guess, in Abaddon, about, what happened in 2009. So there was, this haunted house. It was opening night of the haunted house. There was a lot of excitement, but there were multiple deaths. Yeah. So it did not have
15,
a good
right?
opening night. Let's just say that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Opening night, closing night as well.
Yeah.
It was great. One night only.
Abaddon Hotel opening and the only night. But these people are doing a documentary on it. Right. And so we see kind of just some, it is interesting kind of the way the movie's set up, because you're sort of seeing a reporter who's looking at this abandoned hotel, and we kind of learn more about the reporter later. So the first found footage that the movie starts out with is a video that was actually uploaded to YouTube from someone that actually went to that haunted house. So they actually made their way through part of it, at least. So they were one of the very first people on that October night. So you see kind of this grainy video. They're walking through it. They're going through some hallways. While they're making their way through, a few interesting things happen, right? And there you see this person.
I'll say.
Yeah. Someone that's recording it. And there's this woman in front. And you see, this woman run by and go up the stairs. You see this clown go by. And they're kind of like, huh.
It's like running.
Huh. They're like, is that supposed to be part of their show? is that supposed to happen? Is literally what they say. And so they're making their way through and they're seeing, some creepy things, and they make their way to the basement.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And immediately when they get to the basement already, now this is at the very beginning of this, it seems chaotic. People are trying to get out of there. Outside cops are already arriving. And so there's this video just shows a lot of chaos and doesn't give a lot of answers.
And so watching it, like, everyone's really scared and like screaming and running out. Yeah. I would actually be more scared of like the claustrophobia. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
And everyone's
like
running
trampled on or something.
Yeah. It's like a lot of people in very narrow hallways.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. This is an old house, narrow hallways, not open concept,
No.
But it's interesting. So again, the movie uses a lot of, it uses some found footage, some tapes that the crew records, some things are uploaded online, and then news footage. So now it cuts to the news footage and bodies are just being taken out of this house.
Yeah.
So yeah, things didn't go well. They're blaming it on a severe malfunction. There's not a lot of answers, and the people that are being interviewed are sort of speaking to this, right?
And there's still like a line in the video anyhow, like there's still like a line of people waiting to get in, right? They're like watching
it's imagine part of the show, something like that, right? You think it's part of the show. Exactly.
You're like, oh man, like this is legit.
Like, let me in. Yeah. I'm next. the people they're interviewing, they mentioned there's not a lot of answers. Some photographer does get in and takes pictures, and then these are somehow released to the public. And so this photographer, the pictures, there's a lot of blood. There's a lot of blood on the floor. There are handprints of blood on the wall. They even go in to they go to the basement. The basement door has been like blown off its hinges. There's handprints on the stairs of the basement, on the wall. Things don't look good. Am I intrigued? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell happened in Hull
House? Was this a successful haunted house?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Right. We don't know yet.
Yeah.
But it's a real long game they're playing here.
Yeah, it is. But it cuts to now the documentarians, right? So these reporters, I guess, are, making this documentary. And you know what? Like, they found one of the crew members, Sarah, has come out of the woodwork a few years later. Yeah. A few years later, no one has heard from her since the Hell House events.
It was years later. Gears.
I think it was years later.
A few weeks.
I thought it was years later.
Years later. Geez.
I'm pretty sure it was years later, Ash.
Okay. Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. It was years.
At least several months. And so she's agreed to be interviewed. So she's, it kind of looks like a police station that you're being interviewed at, but it's, I guess it's at a hotel. But yeah, so since it happened, and she's been a part of the Hell House crew. So there was a group of friends who ran these Hell Houses. And since this event happened, she's been staying with her family, I guess.
She looks really out of it and distraught.
Yeah. She looks disheveled. I think time, you know, with what happened hasn't been that good to her.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, she's willingly having this interview, you know, speaking to them about it. And, you know, even says that, you know, if people knew what really went on, it would have been hard for them to deal with because mm-hmm. the public has not gotten a lot of answers exactly, you know, what went on in the house that night.
Mm-hmm. But so does she have more than just answers?
She does. She's like, I'm going to share everything. And not just her speaking. She's got some tapes.
Just like a duffel bag, but like a whole bag.
It's a whole bag full of tapes. There's muscle tapes. So this Hell House crew, you know, recorded everything leading up to the actual event. And that's basically what the bulk of the movie is going to be.
So this documentary crew struck gold, right? They're like, here you go. Yeah. Like she could have made her own documentary. She's like giving it to them, right? That's a pretty good find.
Yeah. I mean, but she hasn't watched it. She doesn't really know what's on there, but she does know they've been recording a lot.
Yeah.
So
I mean, she lived it. So,
all right. So we're now in the taped part of this movie, right? So Sarah's provided all of the footage and the footage starts about 46 days before Hell's opening night. And mm-hmm. we're introduced to our crew. There's five of them.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got Sarah, who we've already met. We have Paul and Tony, and then we have Mac and Alex. Sarah and Alex are dating. Little tidbit you learned from the beginning, Mac and Alex don't seem to get along. Again, they're driving out there. This is their new location that they are scouting right now.
A little Me Too happening there. He's like the boss. He's like dating one of the actors. Well, I don't know what she's supposed to do. Is she just helping set it up?
She's helping. She's part of the crew, I believe.
The crew.
Well, I think she's been part of it. She said earlier that she has been part of it since 2002.
Yeah.
So that was 2009. So I guess for 7 years.
But
so
the guys are like definitely like sexually harassing her. Right. Throughout.
Yeah. Well, I think Paul is for sure. I don't know about the rest of them, but certainly Paul with his voyeurism and his recording.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll get to some of that. But yeah, they're driving out. You know, the only one that seems to know where they're going is Alex, but they arrive upon it about 45 minutes outside of New York City. So I guess all of their other locations for Hell Houses have been within the city mm-hmm. of New York. And now this one's sort of, it's outside of the city, kind of in the country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they arrive, it's an interesting place. Looks like there's an abandoned lot next door.
Cornfield?
There's like cars, like abandoned cars and all this. It's very interesting. So they're there though. They're at its Hotel Abaddon. So mm-hmm. this is the new location of their Hell House that Alex found. So Abaddon Hotel. No one's been there for some time, right? It's been abandoned.
Yeah.
And yeah, they've got 46 days to get this up and running to be a new Hell House for Halloween. So
I have a question. There. Like, sorry to interrupt, but I have a
That's
question.
Okay. That's okay.
So they are making a haunted house, everybody. Yeah, and they have 41 days. They go there in August.
48 days. 48.
Here is my little bone to pick. You know, I like to pick
you
the bones.
Your bones to pick.
Okay. Wouldn't it be scarier? This thing's abandoned with cobwebs and all this stuff. Wouldn't it be scary just to leave it alone other than fix it up? They fix it up into a haunted house. It is already like scary looking when they go in. It's abandoned.
Oh, yeah. It's already creepy. But maybe it's a liability thing, Ash.
It could be. I'm just saying, like, when they first go in, I'm like, this looks pretty good. Like, let's get people in here.
Just let's get people in here tomorrow. Like, we don't even know what's down that hallway or in that basement, but let's do it.
Yeah. I mean, they're spending, like, what's the revenue here? Like, how much money are they getting per ticket? They're spending, like, 40 days.
Like 50 bucks a ticket. I think it's, like, I think you can charge a lot for that. Absolutely.
Okay.
If it's, like, an immersive experience, 100%.
Okay. I wonder what their salary is.
Yeah, I think they take a cut, Ash. You know, I don't think they're getting paid like a salary. I bet they take a cut of what Hell House makes.
Okay. All right. Sorry.
It's a seasonal job. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I know. It's just Halloween. It's like, so August, September, October, and then they're out.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. There's a lot of work to be done. A lot of like things to set up, a lot of freaks to set up, a lot of, you know, moving parts, some lights, strobe lights, all of that. But anyway, they're there. Abaddon Hotel. Going through, kind of checking it out. I mean, obviously, as you pointed out, it's really creepy. They're
not only just looking at it now, but I guess they're going to stay there. So they just sleep there in this abandoned hotel. Like, how does it even have electricity? Like, does it? I guess they get that set up.
Would you stay there? Like, what is, you do not have to stay there. What? And there's clearly another hotel because they interview her at this other hotel nearby.
Yeah.
They could Airbnb or something.
Yeah. But there's other reasons, I guess, as to why they're staying there.
Sure. But from the jump, we don't know that.
From the jump, we don't know that. But yeah, so they're checking out, they're trying to get it set up. So kind of the rest, a lot of this footage, right, leading up to opening night is them getting set up. And so they set up cameras in all the rooms. Yeah. But yeah, guess where the camera doesn't work?
The basement?
Doesn't work in the basement.
You the know? One place so they you have, need it?
Yeah. So they have all these cameras, right? So they can watch like people say come through, but it doesn't work in the basement. And so their solution to this is that because they have these grand plans that they're going to have this woman in the basement who's chained up. And they're going to have these clowns there as well. And one of the clowns will actually be acting almost as like a bouncer. So this is their plan, right? Yeah. He's going to have the keys.
Dear God.
And we'll talk about that when we talk about the basement, but he'll have these keys. And so he can free her if something happens. So, you know, actors are starting to arrive. They're going to have some people playing these various different characters. And it's sort of cutting in between that. So one of the things I do want to talk about now is, so for the good portion, you know, the last maybe 20 minutes or so, right? It's all that found footage. And then in between, it sort of cuts to some of the news footage.
Yeah.
And this is an important one to talk about because it cuts to news footage of the first responders and what they saw. And so remember this, everybody, for Clock when we talk about the ending.
Clock it.
Because at the time I didn't when I watched it. But the first responders say that the first person that they came upon, the first dead body that they came upon when they came through the door was someone who had slit their own throat. Mm-hmm. Right. So someone had killed themselves right by the front door. And not just that, you know, person that had cut their own throat, but we also learned that Joey, one of the actors who plays one of the clowns in the basement, the same person who was running out at the
Mr. Eyeball. Can we call him Mr. Eyeball?
Oh God, Mr. Eyeball. It's so gross. It's so disturbing. I have that written down. So disturbing. His trick. It was disgusting. He can get his eyeball out of its socket. It's really gross.
Yeah.
That 9 days after he survived the opening night, but 9 days later, he actually hung himself. So even if he survived Hell House, you didn't make out too well on the other side. So now we jump back to the found footage, right, that the crew was taping before opening night. And we learn about the rumors about the place and the fact that, you know, why it was abandoned and that it's 20 years after it closed. The owner, Andrew Tully. So he had bought this property and it's this local ghost story. So the name of the town that Abaddon Hotel is actually in is the name of a demon who guards the gateway to hell.
Yes. Hell.
Abaddon, I guess. Yes.
House. It's a little on the nose.
It is a little. And
chicken or the egg, you know?
Andrew Tully's chicken or the egg. This Abaddon Hotel. And some of the guests have disappeared, I guess. There was a woman and her child, and they disappeared. Mm-hmm. But Andrew Tully was able to produce records, I guess, that they didn't disappear, that they had checked out as per normal.
Yeah. Business as usual at the Abaddon.
Yeah. But, you know, there were still questions about this. It was really killing the business as you would assume it would, right? With guests disappearing.
And a little
bit. Andrew Tully hung himself and they show a picture. So he hung himself in 1989. We're now 20 years later. Mm-hmm. It's been abandoned since then. And they are trying to make it the next Hell House.
You couldn't have found a better place to have a haunted house. I mean, that's quite the backstory. Fair,
the history of that. Yeah, it's good. If you were going to look into that menu of what you would select. You would select these things, right?
Like creepy older man.
Yeah.
Kills people, hangs himself. Like, hangs great. Himself.
Yeah.
Let's go.
And they have a video of it. They show a picture of it. So I guess it's like still, the cops arrive. There's a picture of it.
But the still pictures are creepy.
Yeah. They're great in this movie. Mm-hmm. And so, we cut back to Paul, who's been recording. So most of the time, it's been one of the crew members, Paul, who's been doing a lot of the recordings. And so sometimes he wakes up at night, he records when he wakes up. And so, you know, a bunch of things kind of are happening in this house, like weird things are happening. So they're still working on the house.
It seems like they're not alone. It seems like they're not alone in this hotel.
Yeah, it does. It seems like there's strange noises, mm-hmm. right? So they go to investigate it and kind of at the beginning, they sort of like let it go. They're like, oh, okay. But, you know, they'll hear something. They all heard a sound. They're like, oh, no, it's just a soundboard. It's just like an artifact, right? And then they start to see like clowns move. and things like that, right? And there's a clown at the top of the stairs that Paul, he's going through, and he sees a clown at the top of the stairs and it moves his head. And like, he freaks out, rightfully so. Like, yeah. Bravo, Paul, because I would freak out too.
Well, that clown was in the basement. How the hell did it get to the top of the stairs?
Exactly.
Is it animate now? So my big thing when they go to investigate, because they actually don't show a lot of the sounds and stuff. One. They just kind of wake up, any of them, throughout the movie. Yeah. I'm like, why don't you just turn on a light? Just turn on a light. This would all go away.
But I don't know if they have full-on electricity. This is my question. I don't think they have like full electricity everywhere. Like, they I don't think they put light bulbs in the rooms. No. They would have had to get light bulbs out. They would have had to put them everywhere. But back to, you know, when Paul sees the clown, because he had recorded it, and he's freaking out. He shows them all, and they're all like convinced that he must have set it up or something. Like, they're not scared enough about the fact when they rewatch that footage and they see the clown at the top of the stairs. Sarah, this inanimate
object. I feel like Sarah is kind of freaked out.
Fair enough. She might be. But you know, they're kind of just going on there. Their merry way. They're filming a commercial for Hell House. We start to see weird things happen where Sarah's kind of standing and staring at things.
In the middle of the night, like up against a wall, like just.
Yeah, it's so creepy.
Chanting. Yeah. I don't know what it
like
is.
Like sleepwalking. I guess maybe she has a history of sleepwalking. Yeah. But you know what? They've got it ready to a point where they're able to do a tour of it now. So Paul's recording the tour. I guess he does like a GoPro thing he's going through. And so one of the big attractions is a hallway with strobe lights, and there's three freaks that they have in that hallway. And so Paul records and he goes through it. So now Paul's doing a test run of the hallway with the strobe light, and there's three freaks in there. So they kind of want to see what the visitors will see. So he's recording this, right? And so the strobe's going, and we just kind of, this part of the movie is fantastic, right? There's just a bunch of these kind of still shots. It's video, but this with the strobe, it looks like still shots. Mm-hmm. And you see the three freaks. Well, you see more than that. So it looks like there's all these hooded creatures. Oh, so it looks like there's, I don't know, like 10 in there. It's like a lot more. So Paul, rightfully so, he seems to be like, he's catching on, right? He's like, wait, how many did we have in here? Like, what the hell?
Yeah.
And so they rewatch the video and they're seeing clearly more than the three that they had set up in that hallway. And so, Paul has his concerns. He tells everyone, you know, Alex, the person that found this place, is insistent that they keep going. It's the, better interest for them as a company that they keep going. So they keep going. Paul keeps recording though. It's the next night. He sees the clown again in the stairway. He sees Sarah in the corner, like you talked about earlier. Oh. She's like sleepwalking now. There are candles going on and out. The clock is striking midnight. It's just all of these things are sort of coming to a culmination. Like crazy tables, stuff is happening in the
tables
house.
Are being set just randomly at midnight.
Yes.
Like what the hell is happening?
It's a lot happening. And, we go to the next night, Paul's still recording again. Now we're at, it's 3 days till opening. He's convinced that they should not be there.
Yeah.
Right. He thinks, Sarah doesn't look good. She's looking kind of disheveled. He thinks they have no right being there. And so he wakes up a couple nights before opening night. He sees this woman in the room. He tries to hide from it again. He sees her again. So things just keep happening. And now the next morning, Paul's missing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we saw Paul have kind of a creepy night, and the next day he is not there. But it's interesting, right? The crew, they're not that surprised by this. I guess Paul has left before.
Paul's like a screw up. They're like, Paul.
Yeah.
He bails before we start.
And so they're like, okay, we'll call his cell phone. So they call his cell phone. It sounds like someone screaming in there, like a fax machine or something.
Yeah.
They hear the piano.
You know what it sounds? Wait, you know what that thing sounds like? It kind of sounds like Mothman prophecies.
Oh, it does.
It's very Mothman.
Yeah.
When he picks up the phone, it's like a distortion kind of thing. It's Mothman. It's giving
rip off. Yeah.
Yeah. It's giving Mothman.
Yeah. All right. I agree with you on that. And we have to do Mothman on the
that,
pod.
I think we got
to
do that in the spooky season. That's like one of my faves.
It's such a good one. Mm-hmm. They're, not only seeing things, they're hearing
chapstick.
They're hearing things. They're hearing that piano, the sound that it makes. Ash, what is it? I will say, it sounds almost like a church or something, like you'd hear an organ play.
I've watched all of them. Like, I'm obsessed with this franchise, and they really underuse the song in the first one. And dear God, do they overuse it in the rest? So it is like a little earworm in my brain. But it's creepy. Really dissonant. I love it. Just four notes, you know?
Oh, that is so great. They're, I mean, obviously trying to capture some of that Halloween magic.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think it goes head to head with, well, no. Okay. I can't say, I can't even finish that sentence.
No, it's not take that back.
Okay.
Don't even finish it.
I was going to say
embarrass
like,
yourself.
Yeah, it's true. Like Halloween, but no, it's not even close. I take it back. Is. I won't even finish it. No, but it is good. It's a good use of like song.
We may cut
this
from the podcast. So the music, you know, they're hearing that sound. They're like, where is it coming from? Like, is that Paul? So they end up down in the basement. Mac and Tony are in the basement. The clowns are down there. You know, they had set up and Tony sees the clowns move again. So stuff's happening in the basement. Clowns are moving, but they find Paul.
Where is he?
They find him. He's slumped up against the wall in the basement.
Laughing,
he's like asleep. It looks like he's like sleepwalking. He's in the basement. It seems like he doesn't know where he is. But, you know, at this point, even now Tony's convinced. He's convinced that they should shut this down. He's like, why are those clowns? Like, how does their head turn?
That's the last straw.
Objects. Yeah, that's it. Everything else that has happened up to this point, Tony was okay with.
Mm-hmm.
But seeing that clown's head turn on its own when there's no swivel there. Can't do that.
No.
That was it for him. That was it. Yeah. Tony's like, I've had enough. He quits. He goes out into the field. Mac chases him. And then this is an interesting part of the movie. And perhaps I get into this in the sequels, but as you know, I've only seen this one.
Right.
So all I know at this point is that Mac tells Tony something that they cannot leave.
Yeah.
So something to do with Alex, something to do with why they're there. But they can't leave. So Tony and Mac decide to stay.
So this actually, I've seen them all. They do not get into that specific. It's okay. This is kind of like an unanswered question.
They don't share an LLC though.
No, it's, I think it's just a money thing. Listeners chime in, but I think it was just like he got in too really, maybe they do actually talk about it in the second one.
I read some things about it, so, yeah. But I'm curious. Let's talk about it when we like later, but because I read some things about it, but I know they don't go into it in LLC.
No, it's, and I think it's just like a money thing. Like he's in deep. Debt or something. So he has to do this because apparently what they're charging 50 a head. So he's going to make some money.
I don't know
back.
If it's 50. That's my guess. But
no, you said 50. It's 50.
You're holding me to that.
Back like, in 20.
I would pay 50. I would pay 50, I guess is my point. Like, but I would pay like a good amount of money to go into a haunted house. So
this is a high quality haunted person. House.
Yeah.
At least like here, take my money. How much does a haunted house cost?
Like
$200? $200?
Like sounds reasonable to me.
Sounds
so
right. Yeah,
so now it's opening night. So they're all there. You know, they're getting the actors set up in the basement.
They got their sign.
Joey down there. Yeah, they've signed the haunted house signs outside. But you got the Joey the clown, the other Melissa actor who is chained up. She's in the basement.
And then they're checking
the video out and then walkie-talkies.
I have another, it's not a bone to pick per se, but it's her chained up. Like
why does she actually have to be chained?
Yeah. Why does she have to be chained? Like her,
I don't know.
Her arms are up.
The keys too. And then they're like,
and then they cut her dress. Like it's so like, she's supposed to be like a sexual thing.
To be topless. Yeah. And so do you remember all of that talk at the beginning? So I guess this was some sort of compromise.
But she's just like, okay, cool. Like that would hurt. Yeah. You're just hanging there. You're cold in the basement. You're exposed. Yeah. I don't know about that. Like, what is she getting paid? Like, for real? Like,
I don't know. At $50 a head, maybe it's a good amount. I'm not sure, Ash. But, you know, she's got her protector down there, Joey the clown. But, you know, they're starting to see, like, there were no major technical issues, but it does seem like the walkie-talkies aren't working very well. And as we know, the video does not work in the basement.
I feel like the walkie-talkies, so this was what, 2016 was the movie. The actual documentary was, like, the footage was supposed to be 2009. Like we've moved beyond walkie talkies. You could have like earpieces at that point.
Yeah. Like, I agree. You know, maybe. Yeah.
Cheaped out.
Completely. Yeah. I think so too. But you know, we're at opening night now. And so it cuts to some of that other footage we saw at the very beginning of the movie, right? With that YouTube video, there's a long line. So we see that, you know, at the beginning there was that woman that ran by and they were like, is this part of the show? Mm-hmm. And that was Sarah because they were looking for Paul. So she's running up the stairs to look for Paul. Joey, the clown from the basement for some reason is running out of the house. And we also see at this part kind of what happened next, right? Once all this chaos is ensuing, clearly people are trying to get out of the basement. We see that, you know, one of the exit door closes shut as they're trying to get out. Mm-hmm. They're trying to save like people in the basement. But again, this isn't an easy task, right? Things are not going well. So a bunch of them go up to the attic, right? Sarah goes up to the attic. Alex is up there.
So they're up in the attic and Alex just hangs himself in the attic.
Yeah. Very skeleton key.
Yeah, it's very skeleton key. He hangs himself in the attic and then all of a sudden we see all these hooded creatures. So he's not alone up there.
No.
And so Sarah's kind of telling, recounting, you know, to the the reporter who's doing the documentary that she came down from the attic, you know, after Alex hanged himself and the police were arriving and that nothing happened in between going to the attic and leaving the front door. And the reporter smartly asked that question, right? She's like, so you were able to just leave the attic, get out that front door and nothing happened. And Sarah said, no. But she wants to take a break though, from the interview at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she needs a break. Sarah, you know, they've been chatting for a while. She lets them know that they can find her again for more of the interview. She's staying in room 2C, right? They're at a hotel doing the interview.
Hotel,
she's staying
in room 2C.
Yeah, makes sense. But before she leaves, she does tell them, she's like, have you tried to go inside the house? And they were like, well, no, it's all boarded up. And she was like, you really should try to get in there and kind of see it for yourself, right? See it for yourself. See what's going on. So now that reporter is intrigued.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So she's like, yeah, we're going. We're going,
like chomping at the bit.
Yeah.
She's like, really, yeah, okay. She's encouraged.
And as they leave, so before they go, right, they're leaving and they say that, you know, they want to leave a message for Sarah staying in 2C at the hotel that they've been interviewing her at. And the people at the front desk clearly tell them that there is no room 2C at this hotel.
Not this hotel.
Yeah. Not that one. Because the rooms there don't have letters, but you know, they don't think much of it. They're like, oh, okay. Maybe she's staying under an alias because she's like a surviving crew member from Hell House.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. The reporter,
giving out fake room numbers.
Yeah, I guess she's being clever with that. She is chomping at the bit, like you said. So she wants to go check out this house. And her name's Diana, the reporter.
She's giving Gale Weathers. She has no fear.
Yeah, I have that written down too. She's definitely giving Gale Weathers. But her counterpart Mitchell stays back. So he doesn't go to the house. She does. She takes a cameraman with her. She's so excited. They're going to get inside the house and look at it. Mitchell stays back just to catalog, you know, the rest of the footage that Sarah had shared with
her.
Diana's at the house, gets her way in. She's all excited. They're looking at things, right? They're seeing the blood on the floor. They're seeing all these things. Meanwhile, Mitchell, her colleague who stayed back, is reviewing the rest of the footage. And what he sees.
Dear God.
Yeah. He sees the end. He sees what happens between when Sarah left the attic and tried to leave. It did not go as Sarah had explained it did.
No.
She left out a few key points. She did. She left out a few key points.
Yeah.
For one thing, she ran into Paul again. Yeah, she ran into Paul again. And, well, she did not make it out that front door. Paul beat her with, I'm not even sure with what. Was it with the camera?
That's correct. It was with the camera.
Yeah. He beat her, Sarah, with the camera.
To death.
Well,
we think. I don't know. He hurt her.
You see Sarah's limp body on the ground with the camera.
Yeah.
And then you see Paul slit his throat.
And then I think he slides down the wall. And then his last moments are a crotch shot. Right? Just a real
crotch shot.
It's like a real close crotch shot. That was his demise drink.
Yeah.
Paul, the piano player, the light tech extraordinaire, Paul.
Mm-hmm. The voyeur, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Kind of a fitting ending. He was a voyeur, like taping Sarah, and then he dies at the crotch shot.
Yeah, he does.
He was wearing jeans, but like, you know,
yeah, he
crotch
wasn't
shot.
Like naked or underwear. Yeah.
No, but it was like.
Get it, Ash. Yeah, no, anyway. We understand. The camera's pointing in the crotch region.
Yeah.
If you think back to what we were talking about earlier, that first body that they encountered, the first responders, was Paul, right? So both Paul and Sarah were in that hallway. That's why there's a lot of blood in that hallway.
Mm-hmm.
So Mitchell saw Sarah die on camera, is trying to get in touch with Diana. You know, he's trying to let his colleague know that, yeah, you know, that girl we've just been interviewing for the last whatever hours. Yeah, I just saw her die.
Yeah.
On camera.
I think she's dead.
On Hell House opening night. But Diana ignores this call, right? She's like, oh, I'll just get back to Mitchell later. They make their way upstairs.
Stuff to do.
To get to the attic. Yeah. And they get up there and they see one of the rooms is 2C.
2C.
Yeah. 2C. And they're like, she's starting to kind of like put it together, like 2C. And they're like, oh my God. That's what Sarah says she stays. So they open it up.
And she's not scared at all. Yes,
Sarah's in there. She's not, but Sarah's in the room. She's in the room. She's turned away from the door. She turns around. She's got blood all over her. I mean, at that point, Diana's scared. Mm-hmm. And she just, you know, chases the reporter, you know, undead Sarah, whatever it is, ghost Sarah chases her. There's, you know, just a lot of like rocky camera footage. And that is how the movie ends. And mm-hmm. that is Hell House LLC, the first installment.
The OG. Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Drink to that.
Great ending. Yeah. Mm-hmm. As far as twists go, love the ending.
Yeah, it was so good. Just because they bookend it too, right? So it starts with her, do. So you like really yeah. trust her as the interviewee. And then you're like, oh no.
Yeah.
Is she part of this? She's like a ghost. Great movie. Just a little behind the scenes kind of nuggets. We kind of teased this earlier, but Abaddon wasn't like a real place, but the actual production where it took place was a real hotel. It is a real hotel, actually.
Okay. Yes, it was. It is. It still exists today.
Yeah. The Waldorf Estate of Fear in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I guess the actual set designer on this, on Hell House, actually works at the hotel. Her name is Angie Moyer. And, okay. So it's, I did a deep dive on this. It's like, it's based on this, you know, real place in Pennsylvania. Okay. So here's the lore. You can go to it online. You can search Waldorf Estate of Fear and you go to their website and they have this whole legend saying this place is haunted. And this is what it is. This California, wealthy businessman called Oliver Summersby. He committed multiple murders at the hotel. He owned the hotel. He committed multiple murders between the 20s and the 30s. He would lure people into the hotel and kill them. And I guess he killed this little girl went missing. And then the father, you know, went looking for her and ended up at the hotel and was like, no, I think she's here. Ends up going up to the attic and confronting the owner, Oliver Summersby. And sees the dead body of his little girl, like to the side in the attic. And then Oliver kind of comes at him and stabs him. And then he, you know, succumbs to the stab wounds. Before he dies, he takes that knife out and he stabs Oliver and kills him. And they both die together. Really, really, really gruesome. So the whole haunting is that, you know, he's haunting the hotel. And if you stay there, it's really, really, you know, scary. Now, this is all fabricated. None of this is true.
None of it happened.
No. This is some narrative that they wrote. No, there's no Oliver. But it's something that the narrative, you know, that they wrote to sell tickets to their haunted house or whatever, the estate. Oh, wow. I think that's cool, though. And that's, you know, they're kind of,
it I guess. I want to stay there, Ash. Yeah. I think we should do it.
Yeah. And maybe that's the ruse. Maybe they're like, no, it's not true. But it really is. It could be. Yeah. We don't know.
Yeah. It could be. Stay and find out.
Yeah. But I guess... So a few other little things. So it was inspired by, we have to watch this. Apparently it's amazing. This movie called Lake Mungo from 2008. I guess the writer and the director, Cugnetti, it was a faux like horror documentary set in Australia about this grieving family. And they were trying to like deal with their daughter that drowned. And I guess he kind of liked how they show that, but the found footage would show like the jump scares. And that's how he said he got the inspiration from. So Lake Mungo, I think we need to check that out.
Oh, let's do that. Let's add that to the list.
Yeah. And it was like a haunting, like of a family home. And that he said that inspired the movie. So Paul, Danny Bellini, I loved him in it. He was great.
Yeah, so did I. He was great.
when he was in they filmed the thing when he was in the strobe room or whatever, the strobe lights. Yeah. He runs out. You skip this in the synopsis. He runs out and vomits, right? He runs out of the hotel because they were doing all of this during the day. So it's very scary in the hotel. It's dark, but then he runs out. It's like, there's just, you know, it's a day at work and he vomits. That was not scripted. That was real.
Oh, the strobe light made him vomit?
Yeah. Strobe light made him vomit.
Oh, wow.
So they kept that in.
Oh, it's effective.
And this other one, this one's kind of fun, creepy. I don't know. The guy that played the clown, Joey. He was the newly hired like actors with, he had this trick, right? Where he could like, poke. I don't even want to talk about it. It's so disgusting.
I
know.
I don't like talking about it either, Ash.
Well, really okay. Don't. Well, let me describe it. He would, let me describe this. Okay. Verbally. He would put his fingers up to his eye and basically like dig into his eye. So his eye would like protrude out.
I'm not enjoying this conversation.
And it was a trick. That wasn't special effects. This guy could actually do this. And that's why he was hired. So it was like this kind of trick. So Joey's played by this gentleman called Phil Hess, and he's a real life actor at the Waldorf Estate of Fear.
Oh,
yes. So, yeah, so they borrowed him.
Does he play a clown? Perhaps.
Yeah.
In the basement?
I don't know if he plays a clown in the basement. I don't know what he plays, but he does this trick. So who knows? Maybe he's the bartender and he like does the eye trick. I don't know. Yeah. It's pretty gross. But yeah, there's, you know, definitely inspired by some real life events, real life places. Yeah. I won't say events. All right. We are moving on to Screamometer. Allie, I always throw it to you. What do you got? Because I saw it first. You just recently saw it. What do you got? I'm so excited to hear your rating.
I know. I just saw it. And so let me tell everyone, I've only seen this movie one time. So my first time seeing it was this past week when I was prepping for the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched it probably early evening, I'd say, you know, was taking notes during it. I did not see this like on a big screen or anything in a theater. But I will say, damn, this movie's scary. This got me. It really did. So my rating on this one, and you, I don't know if you'll be surprised by this or not, Ash, I'm giving Hell House LLC a 9.5 out of 10.
Oh, hey, this is the first time we've done half points.
Yeah, at least me.
You're giving it half.
I've done half points. I'm giving it 9.5 because I believe I've given Paranormal a 10. Okay. Paranormal is a 10 out of 10. Mm-hmm. The reason I give it a 9.5 is not only was I, it wasn't even on the first watch. Like, it was great. I love the scares.
Mm-hmm.
I could not sleep very well the next night.
Yeah.
I kept like waking up and thinking I saw the shadows and the quick, they do a lot of things where it's like a quick thing. And was that a shadow in the corner?
Yes.
And I kept waking up and dreaming about that. And so that just like elevated my Screamometer. And this movie sticks with you. You have a hard time sleeping at night. 9.5 out of 10 for me.
Okay. I am so happy right now because I recommended this to you and I'm like, it is legit scary. Now I'm going to scare you even more though. So, okay. I give this one a 9. This is a 9. Cause I like when I first time I watched it, I could not sleep. It was so scary. On second watch, I think it's a 9. Like I'm like, it's a 9. It's scary if you watch it in the dark. And just kind of like experience the whole thing.
Experience it. Yeah.
Some of the other ones are scarier.
Oh, really?
Yes. And if you haven't watched the other ones, whatever, stop here. I'm not going to give spoilers or anything, but I think the scariest one is actually the fourth one, the last one. I could not sleep in that one. I woke up in the middle of the night, just like, cause it's in a house. It's not even a hotel. So it like feels like it could be your house and there's like knockings on the door. It is terrifying. The fourth one is actually terrifying. So we should actually maybe do that one.
So you want to hold out potentially for higher rating for that one. So that's why
I've seen the fourth one and that's
scarier.
Had
you not seen it, do you think you would have given it a 9.5, Ash? Like I can't give it a Paranormal level because Paranormal was just a league of its own. But this one affected me at night.
It's scary. If you watch it in the right environment, like totally, if you're like alone in the dark, it is terrifying.
Yeah.
Just the visuals and like you said, sticking with you.
It does.
This franchise is great though. The second one to me was kind of forgettable. I really don't remember it. The third one's pretty good, but the fourth one is legit like terrifying. So that's my kind of review of Hell House. It's a good franchise and they get more into the backstory and the other, sequels and boy, do they get into it. Like they unpack
a lot. They never talk about why Alex makes them stay where they have to stay.
Yeah. I think they get more into the other.
I thought it was that he made a deal with Andrew Tully or something. This
the
is
devil
what
or whatever.
Online.
Yeah.
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 But so they never get into that. I don't know.
So the second and third one definitely get into that. And the fourth one does like everyone that's kind of the, I don't know, villain that, you know, the visual villain or whatever does like make this deal, but there are also some surprises. The third one definitely has some surprises that you wouldn't see coming.
Movies, can I ask you this question? Because I haven't seen them. So I'm coming at this very naive, but are the rest of the movies them trying to reinvigorate Hell House? So they set up
The second one is. The third one's different.
They're like, we can do better. Like 15 people died last year.
Actually, the second one's more at it. The second one's like a documentary. The third one is like kind of a revival type thing. A different story though. It's like really, the third one's really good. And then the fourth one's not even at the hotel. It's at a house in the country. That's all I'll say.
So, it's not people trying to get people to come to Hell House.
Not the fourth one, but the other two are loosely linked to it. It's at the hotel. And then they go off campus in the fourth one. It's, I don't know. It was a low budget movie, right? And it scared the bejesus out of me. So
they made it for $25,000.
Yes. They were like unknown actors.
Like less than Blair Witch.
Yeah. Crazy. Yeah. Okay. It is time for Sips and Scares, where we discuss the scariest parts. of Hell House LLC. You gave it a 9.5. I feel like it's all scares.
A lot of it was.
Jump in.
Let's go through.
Okay.
Let me say though, there's a lot of, you know, the scares that everyone would talk about. What I think one of the scariest parts of this movie were the things that you would just see for a second and you're like, wait, was that something like on? And I only saw that one time, but I'm pretty sure that in a lot of the scenes, you were seeing shadows, you were seeing things in the corner, you were seeing like right throughout the whole movie. And so that was really scary. And that's what kept me up at night. I feel like I kept seeing those things as I'm dreaming. Like, is that something in the corner? Is that something I saw? Like, did you notice that too? Because I thought that was the scariest thing about the movie.
That's one of the things that they've like talked about in some of the behind the scenes. If you rewatch it, there's tons of stuff that you're supposed to be like, wait.
First watch. I saw it. You would see like a, you'd see like a, someone in the corner, like quickly. Yeah. And it wasn't super obvious. Like when Paul was doing his recordings, like there were some of those obvious ones, but there were other ones where it was just like a little bit of hair on the side of the door. And it was so creepy. So there was a bunch of those. I didn't write all of them down, obviously, but there were like a bunch of them throughout the movie and they were all the way through as Paul's recording. Sarah sleepwalking, obviously that's been done a lot, but I loved those scenes. You know, the woman in Paul's room when he's hiding under the blanket.
Sorry, that was my number one scare. Okay, I need to talk about this.
Yeah.
So Paul.
Yeah, let's elaborate.
So they're sleeping at this goddamn hotel, right? Because apparently, you know, they have to. Which
Paul likes to record when he wakes up at night.
He likes to wake. And he's sleeping in this dark room and his door is wide open, by the way. And there's just some like red, orange light just kind of emanating through.
Would you leave your door open? I would.
If there was a red light, I don't know. Like the red light was very creepy. And then the first time he wakes up, he just, you know, you're seeing it and I love it because it's framed on him, but you can see it in the background. You're like, I'm looking at that red light, like something's going to come in there. And it doesn't always, it's almost like, it's like gambling. It's like, you don't get it every time, right? Every so often you get one, so it hooks you. And, so just at some point you see a shadow come in. It looks like Sarah, right? Like someone, like all of a sudden a woman's in the room. He's like, Sarah, like he just kind of calls that to her and then it goes to the next day.
He thinks she's
sleepwalking. But then the other one is absolutely terrifying. Like all of a sudden this woman is slumped against the wall. She looks dead, like a ghost. Right. And then he's like, oh, he turns around. You can see it. You can see it first as a viewer. This woman slumped against the wall.
We see these things before he does. He doesn't even see some of the things that we see.
No. And then he turns around, obviously, and sees it. He's like, oh my God. And then he like gets creeped out and goes, hides under, as you would do. He hides under the blanket. I mean, that's what you would do. And then he's like, oh, like breathing. And then he pulls the blanket down. She's a little closer. And then he goes back up. He's like, oh, I'm just like, you know, mashing it. And then he pulls it down again. And she's right there.
Right like, there.
She's right there. That's in the trailer, actually. Come on, that was the scariest part for me. That was the scariest.
I have it too. I have it literally written down. The woman in Paul's room is the best. Ash, I completely agree with you. But I think there were some other ones too. Like even the beginning with the clown running by and her and Sarah running by when you didn't know what was happening. That was really like that would be just in the moment. Like imagine that happening. That was like very scary. The piano music. The clown moved. Every time the clown moved, very creepy.
Every time.
Because it was done in a subtle way. They did a really good job with this, right? It wasn't obvious. They didn't have the crazy jumps. They didn't have the loud music and the jump scares, which I loved because it was just found footage. It was just like a scene. You would see it. So I love that about it.
And I will say this, like the first one, yes, you get a little tired of the clown stuff if you watched all four, because it's like, spoiler, like you get that same clown.
And like
that clown has a backstory. You learn all about it.
You do
see that clown. Although I still
need to know the clown's backstory, Ash. I feel like it's going to make it less scary. You just need to know the backstory to me.
The fourth one's really scary, I'm telling you. But yeah, the clown, like the inanimate object just kind of moving is definitely really creepy. I agree with you with the background shot. Some of the still photos that they show, like Tully hanging.
Yeah.
Right?
You're Tully hanging is good.
Even just the basement shots at the beginning, looking down the basement, and it's just the basement and it stops and it's really still. Very effective.
It is. And then you see like just kind of a faint like handprint of blood and like everything they see at the beginning too. They see like a Bible down there and like numbers on the wall, like all that stuff sort of adding up too is great.
When Paul's going through and seeing all the stuff and the clock strikes midnight, I think, and all of a sudden the table's set in the dining room. It's really creepy. Yeah. That was pretty terrifying. And I mean the end, right when the hooded figures come out of nowhere.
Oh, yeah.
Or out of the basement.
Hanging.
No, in the basement. So when the hooded figures come out and they kill Melissa, who's the girl like hanging, like,
we don't
basement.
See her actually die, do we? In it?
I'm going to save that for,
obviously she
let's save that for later. We talk about some endings. Yes. What we see on the screen is her begging to the audience, being like, hey, this isn't part of the show. Like, save me. Cause they come down and these hooded figures come out of the wall basically. Right. And they go up to her and she's like screaming. We don't see what happens to her. Assuming she dies. And I mean, and then the hooded figures start coming toward the audience. I mean, that is absolutely and completely creepy,
but they would have thought it was part of it. Right. Like that's the thing.
And then, okay, I thought when Sarah tells the cops, or not the cops, because, okay, I think it's a cop thing because it looks like a cop room, but they're documentarians. When she tells them, like, oh, you should really go see it. Yeah, you should go see the Abaddon Hotel. You're like, something's not right here.
That's planting the seed, yeah. But I didn't know any of that, though. I will say, like, once the 2C room, I think when she said that, maybe I was like, okay. Yeah. And it sort of reminded me of some other movies, but I did not know. I was actually surprised by the ending.
But when she opens it and sees her like staring against the wall, it turns out like that was creepy.
No, but at that point I knew, but I'm saying I thought Sarah was alive. I thought she actually survived it. And I thought she was coming in to be interviewed when I watched it.
I did too. I'm just talking about scares. I thought the ending was really effective. Okay, it is time for Sip and Tell, where we discuss our personal experiences related to the content of Hell House. What do you got?
Yeah,
I know you have a good one.
I do have a good one on this one because I love haunted houses. And when I was living in Southern California, we had this amazing haunted house that almost a decade ago at this point. But it was this place called 17th Door. And it was very highly popularized. We were so excited to do it. So the whole thing is you went to this haunted house and there were 17 doors. And so you went into these 17 different rooms. And then when you got to the 17th one, it was going to be crazy. And so me and current husband, a bunch of our friends went, there were probably like 10 of us. And we went through this thing and it was very much like that, right? You go to like, these were like actual separate rooms. You go to the separate rooms, but one of the rooms, I may have talked about this on the podcast before, but I'm happy to talk about it again. One of the rooms you walk into and it was a very narrow room with like a little bench on it and this creepy ass clown in the corner, not like the same type of clown as this. It was like a more of a happy clown, like with all the colorful and everything, but he's in the corner. Like, and he's like, oh, like, come in. You know? And you're like, oh, okay. And there was a bunch of us get into this small room, this narrow room. And there's like, I don't know, maybe like 10 of us, 12 of us in this room. And you're like, what is going on? Like, there's nothing in this room except us and this clown.
Oh my God.
He's like, come in. And we get in. And then you're like, I'm just looking around, like waiting for, you know, the other shoe to drop. Yeah. And all of a sudden, these balls, these like a pinball, like these balls start fiddling the room. Like, and when I say they fill it, they start fiddling the room. These plastic balls, like that you would play with in like a
McDonald's
playpen or something. Okay. Yeah. Like picture a McDonald's, like playpen thing and those plastic balls. And there was no room, but they start filling the room where they're almost like getting up to like our neck.
A what?
And I'm like, yes. And I'm like freaking out about this. There's this bench. I like jump on the bench. Like it looks like they're going to like completely like envelop us. And we're going to be like stuck in this room with like these balls. It was one of the scariest moments of my life that I've experienced.
Oh my God.
And it was such a, like, it wasn't an obvious scare that you would think. It was this clown in the corner. He's like laughing as this is happening. I'm freaking out. And so I'm looking around, like everyone else seems like freaked out, but like more okay than me. There's this bench in the room. So I jump up on the bench. Because I'm like, well, it's not going to suffocate me. And so they get up, I'm up on the bench and the balls probably rise to like, maybe like my neck. God. And then they're like, they all like go away. But like those moments when it's rising and you think that you're going to be suffocated by these balls in that room. Like that was one of the scariest moments like I've ever experienced. And so that there were 17 rooms and a bunch of the other ones had various different themes, but that was the scariest one. Yeah. It was a clown, just balls from like a playpen. And you think they're just going to overcome you in this like tiny room. And it was absolutely terrifying.
That is like just hearing you. I remember you told me before, but hearing you, you know,
it was so tell scary. It,
the details of it is absolutely scary. It's like terrifying. But
and I'm the only one I think that jumped on the bench. Everyone else is just letting it happen to them. I'm like, I'm going to suffocate. So I think, you know, I would do well in a haunted house. Because I looked around. I'm like, where's my solution?
Al, your final girl energy.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Ash.
Your final girl. You would totally survive. Yeah. So quick follow-up question on that. Was there a height, like a height limit or height minimum? Right?
Because like, do this, you had to be, I think you had to be 13 years old to do it. And if you were below 18, you had to bring like a parent with you.
But what if you were below 5 feet? You know what I mean? Would those balls overcome you?
It would have. I think it would die? Have. Because I think it got up to my neck. And I was on the bench.
What?
So I was like, and I'm like 5'3". So okay. I was like absolutely terrified. And it happened, like I'm describing it as if it was slow motion. It happened very fast, right? But I see it happening. The clown is giggling. It was absolutely terrifying. Yeah. I wouldn't bring like a little child in, but I don't think children were allowed. There was some like pretty like X-rated like stuff happening in this haunted house.
Some adult. So. Yeah. That's some adult content.
Adult content. Yeah.
Wow. I'm sorry that happened to you, but like, was the overall experience, did you like how much did you pay for that to be scared out of your mind?
I feel like it must've been $50 or something, which is maybe where I came with it because I was terrified.
Was it worth it?
100%. Would I do it again? Absolutely. Okay. I would.
Well, now you know.
Yeah. No,
I'll go with you next time.
Yeah. At the time I didn't thought I was going to suffocate. Would I do it again? Yeah, I would.
See, that's really interesting because that would play on me. Like I'm claustrophobic, like any of that stuff would be my worst fear. Some of the other stuff, I'd be like, eh, you know, but like any like small hallway, the ball thing, like I'm like, that would like,
it was scare, the best room. It was scariest, scare me but so the much. Best room. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that is quite the sip and tell. How do I follow that up? Yeah. I'll follow it up by having the opposite experience. I have two sip and tells. So number one, Florida Strawberry Festival. I went to a concert a couple of years ago.
This.
Hailstorm, one of my favorite bands. And
where's this one going? Like,
let me tell you. So we went to the concert and it's like a dry festival. So like, did we pregame before? Yeah, we did. And we went to the festival. A dry festival actually is cooler than it sounds because it's really clean. Like there's no, you know, no spilled alcohol and no one's like vomiting anywhere. Anyway, so we went to this amphitheater and watched the concert. And then we had time to kill afterwards because it ended pretty early. And it's a fairground. We're like, oh, let's go on some rides, as you do. We went on like the Ferris wheel and we went to this one. We got like tickets. Oh, I would not go on the zipper, but they did have that there. They had like a lot of little things. This was like a couple of years ago. And then we go to this one and it was like a haunted house. It was called like, it was little, you get in this little cart and you go in the haunted house and we go up to the guy, the carny guy, the gentleman working the carnival ride. And we said, hey, like, is this scary? He's like, oh yeah, it's like really scary. We're like, oh sweet. You know? So we get in this little cart, me and my CH.
A cart.
Yeah. A cart. Like
it took you through.
Yes. It was a cart. You get in and there was kids. It was like
just the two of you, or you were with other children?
It was like, yeah, children. That should have been my first clue. There was children, but it was at night, you know, but there was children in the front cart and we get in and basically you just go in and it was just a little like figure eight and you go around and you get, there's one jump scare. This thing comes out. It's like, ah, and we're like, what? And then something else, something comes out and then you come back around the outside and we're like, and we paid like four tickets for that. And like those tickets were cheap.
Was just $50.
That might have been $50. It wasn't $50. It was probably like $15 for like nothing, you know? And we're like, what? And I didn't even have alcohol, right? Because it was a dry festival. So I'm just sitting there like sober, going through this weird haunted house. Haunted house in quotation marks. So mine was the exact opposite of yours. Florida Strawberry Festival. Not scary, but they had some fun rides and some cool bands.
I was dead sober during the clown room. You basically weren't allowed to drink. I mean, obviously they couldn't do anything, but
try a haunted house.
Yeah, it was, you didn't want to, like you had to go through in the dark in these rooms. Like you wouldn't want to be drinking.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Okay. So that's my first one. My second one is this. Watching this movie, I felt some feels, like I felt some things, you know, like I am very much about like nightmare fuel. You know, if I watch something and it keeps me up at night, like that freaks me out.
Yeah.
And I have this story, you know, the story. And it happened to me and it's weird. And I don't know, when I was a kid, you were the one that used to sleepwalk. I actually did not sleepwalk. Not that I know of.
I was Sarah, guys. Like people would find me in other rooms and I would like, why am I here?
Find her in like random rooms staring up at a light. You're like, okay, you'd have to like,
ask for like
coax her. Okay. But here's my story. Very and maybe I've conflated it that it like happened to you, but this is my memory. So my memory is this. I wake up in the middle of the night and I'm freezing and I'm at the top of the basement stairs. We live in a bungalow. So our room, me and Allie shared a room. We had bunk beds. And I had somehow made my way to the basement and I was sitting at the top of the stairs, like sleeping. And I wake up and I'm like, where am I? And realize I was at the top of the basement stairs. And so I ran like a bat out of hell back to my room. And it was, I think it was 3 a.m. And that never happened again.
Just one time.
One time I woke up the top of the basement stairs. Yeah.
Yeah. That's scary.
You know, I remember I woke up cause I was like so cold. I woke up and I was like, oh, and then I ran back.
Did you wake me up when you came back into the room?
No, I didn't. I just went back to sleep.
You never told a soul.
until this very moment.
No, definitely told like this is the first.
No, I had the first revelation. You're hearing it here first, everybody, with Allie and the whole world. No, but that happened to
That's creepy. How old were you?
Like eight years old. I can't explain it.
You must have been sleepwalking like me, Ash, and just woke up there. But that's really scary.
I must have been
sleeping on the stairs.
Yeah, sleeping on the stairs, like curled up against the wall stairs. Yeah. And I was cold and that's what woke me up. But yeah, visceral formative memory when I was 8 years old. Okay, it is time for cliches and ripoffs. I think we have a few. What do you have?
I have a list about a mile long. This may be my longest list.
Oh my goodness.
Of ripoffs and cliches. And it goes both ways, right? Like things.
Yeah, I'm gonna have a drink for this.
I will say that it's mostly things that that Hell House ripped off or we can call it inspired by, we can call it many things, but let me go through the list. Let me just go through the list and then I'll explain it. How about
okay.
that?
Okay.
Because I've got a long one. Mm-hmm. Number one, Blair Witch Project.
Yeah, obviously.
Number two, Paranormal Activity.
Mm-hmm.
Number three, The Quiet Ones.
Yes.
Number four and a lot, The Innkeepers.
Oh,
which
yeah.
we talked about in an earlier episode. Number five, Session 9. Number six, and this is fitting, The Sixth Sense.
Mm-hmm.
Number seven, an oldie but a goodie, Rosemary's Baby.
Oh.
And number eight, you already mentioned this earlier, Scream.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so eight movies that I think certainly it ripped off or was inspired by. There's a lot of them. And I thought of every single one of them while watching this movie.
What are the details? Like what?
Yeah. I mean, Blair Witch is pretty obvious with the found footage. And I think the biggest one with Blair Witch, right, is the documentary style where they're interviewing the townsfolk.
Yeah.
So that was clearly inspired by Blair Witch. Paranormal activity.
Wait. Blair Witch. What do you mean? Like the basement bricks and like where the people are up against the corner? The
okay, fine. Like, a lot more than just
it was
okay,
so, Blair Witch to me. Yeah. So Blair Witch to me. Yes.
Yeah. And it was what? Blair Witch was in the
90s.
And this one came out in 2016. So yeah, so clearly inspired by Blair Witch. Paranormal Activity. I will say Sarah, even a lot of the scenes kind of looked like Katie.
Yes.
There were a lot of similarities, right? And that had to have been on purpose, right, Ash?
Yeah. I mean, she was like, well, they said like these other movies inspired it, but I'm like, yeah, but Sarah's like basically going crazy, right? She's like becoming possessed or whatever throughout the whole movie. Yeah. To me, that was like
she's
Katie. She was Katie.
She was Katie. And she looked like her. And that had to be on purpose. She's in her like pajamas a lot. And that was on purpose.
Yeah.
The Quiet Ones. Have you seen The Quiet Ones?
Yes.
With, like the documentary.
Yes, I love that one.
Exorcism.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it was very similar to that too. Again, that kind of documentary style, sort of trying to debunk things. It just, a lot of it reminded me of that. The Innkeepers with the backstory. And The Innkeepers came out way before this one. Like, obviously, that was a made up story too, but it was in a hotel. The music, there were probably out of all of the movies I named, Innkeepers, it ripped off Innkeepers the most.
Absolutely. And Innkeepers actually was more like jovial, kind of fun, the way it like filmed everything.
Yeah.
But the piano, right? They played exactly like the piano like song in The Innkeepers and they did it in
similar.
Yeah. A better song actually in Hell House for sure.
Yeah.
So, what's the Scream one?
Well, can I go through the rest of these first?
Yeah, you may. Yeah.
Session 9 with Paul being found in the basement. 100%.
Oh my God. He's totally.
That was the scene. I mean, the session 9 when he was found and like, he was like coma or whatever. He had the lobotomy. Josh Lucas, like 100% when Paul was found. That was the exact same scene.
Yeah. Go listen to, that was our third episode. Go listen to Session 9.
Episode.
If you like this, you'll like Session 9. Session 9 might be even better.
Yeah, it was so great. And then Sixth Sense when Paul's under the blanket, right? With like the Misha Barton character when Cole's in the tent.
Yes, yes.
And the things getting closer, like that was very reminiscent. Rosemary's Baby with all the hooded characters and kind of the demonic possession.
I mean, 100%. He must. I mean, I don't think a lot of these aren't necessarily ripoffs. Like I think with Rosemary's Baby, that was with the hooded characters and everything. Mm-hmm. That was 100% like paying homage to a classic.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
And Scream, Gale Weathers.
You said that earlier. Oh, sorry, Gale Weathers. Yes.
Gale Weathers. I mean, Diana was Gale Weathers.
She was.
She had her Kenny, you know, yeah. her Kenny who came, who he should have come along with her. I mean, yeah. 100% Gale Weathers, Scream.
Yeah.
Definitely. So I know
she had the hair and everything. Yeah. She had the hair and everything. Okay. Those are so good. And I agree with all of those. I have a couple of more.
Okay.
So I agree with the Paranormal Activity, but I have one more thing because I talked about this. Go listen to our Paranormal Activity episode. I talk about all the four different alternate endings. And one of the spoiler, if you haven't seen it, one of the alternate endings is when Katie kills Micah with the camera. Yeah. And she does it on camera. Right. So that's the alternate ending. So the alternate ending, or not the alternate ending, the ending that we see.
The actual ending.
Yeah. Was him killing her with the camera, which is the exact same as Paranormal Activity.
I alternate ending. That ass. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that was, I mean, 100% a copy. American Horror Story, season one.
Oh, yes.
Spoiler again.
Yeah.
If you die in the house, you can't leave it. Right. This is very similar. So if you die in the house, apparently Sarah left and some other people in the other movies, the other follow-up movies have left. But if you die in the house, like you're like a part of it, like you're part of this, whatever devil worship thing that they have going on. So I thought that was very, very, very similar to American Horror Story. And I have to say a couple other little things here. The head tilt. Was that the first time we've seen a head tilt? Mm-mm. Oh, no,
it was not. No, it was not.
Who did it better, Michael Myers or the clowns?
Michael Myers. I mean, that's just, you can't even ask that question. If anyone thinks the clown did it better, I mean, I just really think you're wrong.
Yeah. But I mean, the head tilt is just so classic. So good. And then I love saying this because this movie, we can never do it because it'd be a 5-minute podcast. Like, I don't even know what to talk about in this podcast.
I want it. Skinamarink.
The camera angles.
Like, I knew you were going to say Skinamarink. Wait, some of our friends on Instagram did Skinamarink. They watched it recently.
I don't think they're doing a podcast on it though. Cause I'm like, how?
I
like,
really hope they do. Nothing happening.
I don't think we can do it. Maybe we should like team up with them and do you guys want to talk about Skinamarink for like 20
spooky
minutes?
Spooky sips.
Let's just do
spooky sips. Let's do a podcast together. Let's
do Skinamarink. And like, what doesn't happen? Like, there's no plot. So the synopsis is like one minute. But yeah, Skinamarink with the angles of the cameras. I thought that was pretty funny. And then my last one was this. I don't know. Friday the 13th. It's a little Friday the 13th at the beginning, and then it turns into something else. But like Sarah's hanging around in like her underwear, right? And they're kind of like filming it. I thought it was very like Friday the 13th.
Okay. I think it was paying homage to like the 70s, 80s horror with that. Yeah. I agree with you on that. No, yeah. I think I thought about that too. Amityville, I mean, did some of that too, right?
Oh, yeah. So yeah,
a lot of those horror of that time.
Yeah, there's some more Amityville, which we'll discuss some when we talk about some of the alternate endings. All right, it's time for alternate endings. Do your drum roll. Do your drum roll, please.
Tell me there are some.
There are no alternate endings.
What?
But
what?
The shock. What? The shock that you have every time.
I thought there were.
I know, it's like
not up. I just really expect there to be, Ash. Well, I get my hopes up.
I think we have alternate endings like 50% of the time, so it's not up to me. But there's a director's cut, right? So there's deleted scenes.
Okay.
Right. And I have some little doozies here that I will share with you. It's one hell of a deleted scene. I'll give you that. Mm-hmm. So the deleted scene is like 9 extra minutes. There's a bunch of like behind the scenes things. They give additional interviews and things like that. But the best part is this. So this was a super low budget, $25,000, you said?
$25,000.
Yeah. And it didn't have a major theatrical release.
Streaming. Straight to streaming, yeah.
But it was a hit. So they did make some money. And I guess because of the success of it, they were allowed to go back in. The director, Stephen Cugnetti, was able to hire someone. So he hired a special effects person who was able to kind of finesse the ending, add some special effects to it and extend it, and give us a little more information about what was actually happening. Here's what happened. So when they go down, because like they just go down to the basement, we see the hooded figures, and like we don't really know what happens to Melissa.
Fast. Yeah, it's really quick. That's what I was saying. It's very quick.
You can watch the ending if you have the DVD from way back when, but you can watch it on YouTube. So you can watch the whole movie on YouTube. I don't know. Someone pirated it, uploaded it, and it's there. thank you. So
I need to watch it on Amazon.
Yeah. So I watched it. And yeah, it's an extended ending. So it's the same thing where the people are the patrons are in the basement and they're like screaming. You see the hooded figures come towards Melissa and you kind of see more of like what happens. They like basically kill her. And then there's an explosion that happens. It's a special effect.
That's why the door goes off, because they were saying the basement door was blown off.
Correct. So there's an explosion that happens in the floor of the basement. It basically opens up, I don't know, like the portal to hell.
Okay.
Yeah. And then she gets dragged into it. And there's like this light and it's a pretty good special effect. It's like a glowing, you know, red, orange kind of light thing. And you hear like almost like a demon growling and she gets pulled into it. Very poltergeist. So yeah, that's actually the extended kind of ending. And that makes a little more sense because like they said that some of the bodies they couldn't find. Right. They got pulled into the, I don't know, the hell hole.
So they didn't find Melissa's body. I think they talked about that too. They actually didn't find her body, right?
She's in hell.
But I have a question for you. What would you prefer more? That ending or the ending we got that was sort of ambiguous?
Maybe the ambiguous one because they had sequels. If they didn't have sequels, I think I would have wanted the director's cut.
Yeah. Because I left it like you heard the things, right? And you know that people died in it, but it was confusing. You did not know really what happened in the basement.
Yeah.
And you were sort of kind of left to your own conclusion. So I agree with you on that. But I will say I like definitive endings. These things were, you know, opening up a portal. How, like, I don't know about that, you know? let me take away from some of the movie because the rest of it was very, like, just real, like, on VHS. Like, you know?
Yeah, so. It was fair. I mean, it was very Amityville, like, Poltergeist for sure.
Yeah.
But it was only supposed to be the one movie. So they went back in to do this.
It did well.
So they had all this. And he said, like, the director, he knew what he wanted to do. He had a really good backstory, right? Like, it was pretty rich.
Yeah.
And then the other scene that's deleted, Sarah dies another way. So she doesn't die by the camera.
Getting beat by Paul with the camera?
Like, Paranormal Activity? No. Paul stabs her. Stabs her, and she kind of slumps against the wall, and then he stabs himself.
I like the getting beat by the camera thing because when you're watching it, the camera's moving and everything. Yeah. I prefer that.
It's just like, she doesn't, so I guess she gets the one hit, you know, and she doesn't like, there's no defensive wounds. She just kind of takes it.
You and the defensive wounds. Like,
yeah.
It's her friend. I don't know. Coming after, like, if a camera like knocks you over the head, I think you're out, Ash.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I don't want to ever find out. You know what I mean? All right. It is time for the villain. Allie, who's the villain of this movie? You have some strong opinions. I think you will settle this for us right now.
Well, yeah. Usually I go with like some obscure thing. I'm going with the obvious one when I talk about the villain here. The villain of this movie 100% was Alex. Made them go there, made them stay, even when there were like questions to leave. You know, I'd say he's, even though he did meet his demise by hanging himself in the attic.
He sure did.
He's 100% responsible for everything that happened. Alex is the villain of Hell House LLC.
Alex is the villain. Mm-hmm. You know, I gotta go a little bit upstream here. I mean, clearly, like, they talk about Andrew Tully, right? They explore more of Andrew Tully. They talk more about Andrew Tully he's in all of the sequels. And, like, watch them because it gets really into it.
Yeah.
This was 2008, right? Or 2009?
It was 2000 and give me one second. 2009.
Okay. So I think what happened, I think the true villain here is the recession, right? There was a recession in 2008, 2009. They had some money problems. They had to get out. They had to get out of New York City. They had a thing in Brooklyn. They had to go to the country for some reason, right? And they had to make money. And because there was an issue, that's the only thing that he understood, right? The reason why he had to stay was the fact that it was money problems. So I think, you know, if we want to really talk about who the villain was,
$50 ahead, you know,
maybe it was more at that point, but like it was a recession. So were people really paying $50? You know what I mean? There was a recession at that time. So to me, I think it was the stock market recession. I think that was really
go even further, Ash, like the mortgage situation and all
the
of
mortgage
that.
Situation. The Big Short. I mean, they're going to an abandoned hotel. Even the abandoned hotel, like they need to make some money, right? So, like, sure, come on in here.
Been like, abandoned for 20 years.
Yeah.
Andrew but they're like, himself.
Yeah. They're like, well, we can make a little bit of money here from this guy coming in.
And so, let's charge $50, maybe 50 more.
Bucks ahead.
Jury's still out on how much they paid to go in there.
Yeah.
I'm going to say it was a lot.
And then my second villain is this.
Oh, you have two villains.
You said this. You said this last time, the curiosity. Is the villain really just like the voyeurism wanting to know more? If they didn't do a documentary, nobody else would have died. You know what I mean? So it's the curiosity.
No one else would have died. Oh, well, Diane.
Clearly, Diane. Yeah. And the rest of the crew died. And there's just more footage to be found, more footage to be put up on YouTube. So was it just like the villain of, you know, wanting to be exposed, wanting to be out there, wanting to be famous? Was that also a villain in this?
Life of a showgirl, you know what I mean?
Life of a showgirl. We're bookending it with Taylor Swift. Yeah. Because that usually doesn't end well, right? They're like, yeah. I want to get myself out there. Yeah, I'll put myself in dangerous situations. And they explore more of this. Maybe I'm biased because I've seen the other films, but they explore a lot more of this in the next films as well.
But the other films, they know that happens. So now they want to capitalize. I'm assuming, I haven't seen it, but I'm assuming they want to capitalize on the fact that people died there.
Yeah, they do. And they want to, but it's still just like YouTubers and people, influencers and people that want to like get their stake on it. Right. So I also think that's kind of the villain, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Buyer beware. You might end up in the depths of hell. With Melissa.
You might get pulled in.
Although I think Joey would want to be down there with Melissa. So, you know, I think he'd be okay with it. Well, that's going to do it for Sips and Screams episode 23, Hell House, LLC. Thank you so much for joining us and listening today. Join us next time as we sip on more themed cocktails and or wine and discuss the good, the bad, and the truly terrifying of our favorite horror movies. Cheers. Happy spooky season.
Happy spooky season.